Okay, welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Lindsay Clausen, and I will be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute of Politics was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally, in Washington, D.C., and in 55 countries around the globe. The Hinckley Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences to Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door to our website, www.hinckley.utah.edu, for more information. The Hinckley Institute of Politics proudly presents the 17th annual Rocco C. and Marion S. Siciliano Forum. This year's theme is the future of U.S.-Latin American relations. This is one of 21 events that will extend through next Monday. For a listing of all the events, we encourage you to pick up a brochure in the back of the room. The title of the morning's forum is How Green Gold Will Save the Amazon. Courtney Macbeth, Associate Director of the Hinckley Institute of Politics, will introduce our guest.
It's with great pleasure today that I get to introduce Mark, who's been a colleague and a dear friend for the last 8 years as we've developed internships for close to 100 students who have served Hinckley internships in Brazil with Azul Airlines and with VigZul and now with Mark's new bamboo adventure. So we're so pleased that he got here safely and at 2 a.m. last night, and everything was fine with the flights. So a little bit about Mark. He was born and raised in Salt Lake City, born to Gary and Rose Neeleman. In 1993, he started his first adventure being an entrepreneur in Mountain View, where he co-founded Everything Fresh. Mark graduated from the University of Utah in 2004, and he was among the first graduates from the university with an international studies degree. After graduating from the U, Mark worked at Health Equity, a Utah-based company that has revolutionized the insurance industry. In 2008, eager to move his career to the international frontier, Mark and his wife Kelly, who I want to note did two Hinckley internships, relocated to Brazil to help co-found Azul Airlines with his brother David Neeleman. Since its inception, Azul Airlines has become Brazil's largest airline and one of Brazil's fastest-growing companies. And in the last 6 years, it has transported more than 2 million passengers a month and boasting an annual revenue of $5 billion U.S. dollars. 2 years later, in 2010, Mark launched Jumpstart, which later became known as VigZul, a door-to-door sales company focused on bringing monitoring technologies to the Brazilian middle class. VigZul is now worth $240 million U.S. dollars. In 2012, Mark finally found his love, which he started at the very young age. He took his first trip to Brazil at 2.5 weeks old. Rose took him as a baby, and since then he has loved bamboo. So in 2010, he started also a company called This Is Brazil, and also his bamboo project in the Amazon. Mark's love of Brazil, social and political contacts, and his attention specifically to the plight of the Amazon rainforest led him to connect with the power of bamboo. Mark has now dedicated his time 100% to stopping the deforestation of the rainforest by developing bamboo as a viable wood replacement, with the goal of reforesting the devastation caused by illegal logging and massive ranching trends with bamboo and other planting strategies. Starting in 2004, Mark took his place on the board of directors of Bambuzar, a division of Banco Florestal, a newly formed nonprofit institute dedicated to the study and development of bamboo technologies. Mark is a sought-after and a great speaker in Brazil. He's also a talented musician, and he has a wife, Kelly, and a cute daughter named V, who we wish could have been here. But with that, I'm so happy to introduce Mark, and I hope he feels like he's coming home to the Hinckley Institute, because he's been such a great friend and partner for us and providing so many students with amazing opportunities, and we're excited to hear from you.
Thank you so much. I had to do everything I could not to bawl during that entrance. Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, and it's a true pleasure for me to be able to share this this project that I've been working on. Sorry if I'm getting a little emotional, but it's a super emotional topic. I've had the opportunity to go to Brazil my whole life, and I've had a passion for the place ever since I can remember. And bamboo always seemed to go like hand in hand with Brazil for me. And my mom is, you know, the first to always say that, you know, as a child, that was the first thing I would look for when we go to Brazil was the bamboo. So, again, sorry, I'm kind of emotional because it's just so crazy. Just everything just plays together so well in this whole thing. But anyway, so how green gold will save the Amazon. So this is my project that I believe that has the capability to not only save the Amazon, but also, let's say, the entire developing world, where they are like at an extreme need for, let's say, building supplies and also sustainable business. You know, one of the biggest problems with Brazil and most of the developing world has been what they call the resource curse. And the Amazon is, let's say, the one of the biggest victims of the resource curse. Gold, you know, first started with rubber, and the rubber tapping industry was a very big industry. My parents have done 3 books on the subject. In the intro, it talks about the decadence that was in the area at the time. I'll tell you a little more about that as we go on here, but just wanted to, you know, can just start out here with the intro. I'm not really good at using presentations, just so you know. In Brazil, I kind of wing it. And it's easier when I don't know anybody in the crowd, and I can just fly into the city, do a speech, and fly out the next day. And if I said something silly, I don't worry about it. But here it's my near and dear. So I'll try and do the best I can here. So here's a picture of, let's say, what all of us imagine is the Amazon. You know, a lush paradise of ecosystems where, let's say, like, you know, just the Garden of Eden, so to speak. And so Courtney did this, so I don't really need to go over that, so we'll jump that. So just wanted to start out and show this image here. This right here is what makes up 50% of what we all believe and love of the Amazon. 60% of the Amazon is in Brazil. Today, 75% of the Brazilian carbon output is due to deforestation. The average Brazilian uses in 1 year the amount of energy as an American uses in 1 month, just because of the climate, right? So let's say Brazil is polluting at a rate almost equal to America, but with, you know, less people and, you know, no, not much of a reason to be doing so. And so what happens here, thank heavens, 2 days ago, actually, the worst, they say the culprit behind this whole problem here, was actually arrested in Brazil. They estimate he burned over the last year 200,000 acres of Amazon forest. They go in and they chop it down first, clear cut for the wood, and make charcoal out of it to then, you know, sell to all over Brazil to do their churrascos, which I used to love. Now it's hard to enjoy. This is kind of what you see. These are the trails of the cows. And I grew up with my grandfather always talking about how he wanted to be reincarnated as a cow in Holland, on the countryside. And when I saw these cows out there in these kind of a circumstance, it was really, really heartbreaking. As I go, I'll tell a little more of the story, but I just, you know, all this stuff is so emotional to me, and I don't realize it until I'm actually saying it out loud, and I do because I just in the moment of it all, it's so intense. But here's some more stats for you, just to kind of scare you. It's estimated that less than 100 years, there will be no more rainforests. Because, again, it's just these, you know, at these places, and it's really sad because what happens is when somebody, like yesterday they rest, 2 days ago it was great because it was, you know, one of the high-ups. But usually it's these poor people that have, you know, land that they're, you know, just trying to be able to feed their kids and stuff. And so they're doing whatever they can to, you know, whatever. But so it's sad because there's it's a problem with our current dichotomy of the way everything is looked at and treated in the Amazon. As you can see here, it's a very alarming situation. But the good news is this, is that scientists believe now that the Amazon wasn't always like the Amazon is today. They believe that it was like every other place on planet Earth along that same location of the equator. It was a desert, just like it looks like now in most of these areas. Because once you take away that ecosystem, what they call the vox, which makes the rain come. In the photosynthesis, they take in the carbon dioxide and release that. Vox, that's what creates the cool and the warm air, and then that's when the rain comes. And so once you get away of that vegetation, it no longer can do so. So before starting this project, I had gone to one jungle city, and it was just so unbearably hot, and I just hated it. It was dirty, it was... You know, there was a lot of poverty. It was really just a sad situation. It was, Exhibit A of the resource curse. And so this right here is a very powerful picture, too, because this one tree you can see, that is the tree of the Brazil nut. I'm sure you guys are familiar with the big, famous Brazil nut. Well, today I've got some images that I found it for this, but of one of those trees with about 1,000 cows trying to get shade under that one tree. And again, you know, on the way, while you're passing these cows, during this expedition, we've had to go through hot air balloon and helicopter to get to these areas to find the bamboo. Sorry. But anyway, and so these trees, though, so that is today, that's protected because of a lady named Marina Silva and a man named Chico Mendes. They were children of what they call serengeiros, who my parents wrote the book about, that were relocated from the north of Brazil and the far north east of Brazil and taken all the way across over here to the depths of the jungle. And they were taken over there for the exploration of the rubber trade, which, again, was actually a pretty good industry for the area because you can't cut down a rubber tree and still get rubber out of it. You got to go, and it's a very intricate process where they cut it with a knife and trickle it down into a bucket, and then they pass it on. And so it was actually good for a local economy, for what they call the autonomistas, which were your entrepreneur, your jungle entrepreneur. You know, the guy that doesn't want to go and work on a factory or work on a cattle ranch and, you know, be a cowboy. So this guy's going to walk through the jungle and pick up nuts and berries, and he collects them, and he goes and he sells them, and he gives it to a co-op. And so So these people, when their forests started getting murdered. I forget how the order of my presentation was going. So I'll stick to my order here. So as I said, I was obsessed with bamboo, and I started doing these Googles, you know, throwing it into that massive human brain, and seeing who else had kind of, you know, thought about bamboo. And at this moment, again, the deforestation wasn't real to me, you know. I'd read about it just like everybody here, and it's like, you know, I'm in Brazil, but I'm not in the Amazon, and it's like, you don't see it, whatever. It's out of sight, out of mind, you know? So to me, I was just, you know, looking for my next kind of Brazilian business endeavor, you know? I was, had just gotten funded with Vigzul, and I was kind of like to think I like to have my next project ready to go at any given moment, just in case. And so in this case, I was doing so, but I was kind of envisioning that I'd, you know, be working in bamboo in the year to come. And so I did a Google, and I found this site. This video of this site right here. Volume. I didn't think about volume. Guys, let's go.
The reason that bamboo grows so much faster and it produces so much more than wood is that it's actually a grass, and it grows not as one plant as a tree does, but as many small plants on one mother root.
So basically, they all work together. Once bamboo sets up its root system, it works all in a cohesive unit. David Sands here, 20 years ago, decided to dedicate his life as an architect to building a house without killing any trees. He's 62 today, so he was at a time about 42 years old, and was severely impacted by the deforestation problem, you know, and what was going on, not only the Amazon, but all over the world in all of these kinds of situations. And so he decided to dedicate himself to this. But at the time, and still today, in order to do a bamboo structure, you can use the poles for doing your infrastructure, but you can't do 100% bamboo infrastructure today because there's nothing that is actually approved by the international organs. And so I reached out to these guys, and they said to me, Mark, look, we're 20 years in this market. We're sick of building homes for Sammy Hagar and Woody Harrelson. We want to build homes for the people who need homes, and we want to save the Amazon, and we're not going to do it building 500 homes every 20 years doing this way. So we've spent the last 5 years finding the most dedicated people in each individual area of this sort, working with University of Washington, and I can't even say a little more than this because the guy's not 100% left yet. But anyway, he helped us set up and industrialize a process that we could make a 3-ply bamboo plywood that would be the first ever structurally certified bamboo plywood. It would allow you to make buildings, infrastructures 100% out of bamboo using the bamboo poles, which have already been approved for and are being used for in building constructions in California and other places. They say that using these principles of bamboo and tapering up the poles, it's ideal for an earthquake, and for it to be able to channel out the energy and for it not to crumble down a building together. And they've already started actually making steel in the same shape as bamboo because of its qualities. And the Amazon people, the Amazon native Indians, always called it green steel, was actually what they called it too. And so what I've got here is, let's say, an extremely prototype version of it. You'd have probably a much better version of this type of a thing in just your cutting boards. All you guys are probably noticing your bamboos invading your house in like all these different ways. I promise you right now, after this talk, it'll be like, you'll see what I'm saying. It's going to start invading it. But it's a good thing. Don't be sad. This shirt right here is bamboo. Every time I see one of my nieces or nephews, they have a new kind of bamboo socks or pants or something like that. So the utility of it, I'll continue on. I'll get into this more. But basically, the market of bamboo today is like, if you want to build a bamboo home, you're going to pay 125% of what you pay for to do a regular one, because it's a niche market, right? It's something that, so you got your hippies and you got your rich people, but like your average Joe is not going to do it, and he's not going to care because, he wants price and he wants durability and he wants all that. So basically that was our focus here. So we can get into let's say your Joe Lunchpail's houses and make it so it's like it's an issue. And so what I did is I went out to Top Pictures, a year ago in Hawaii. I went out to Hawaii to kind of understand this, because again, at the beginning, I didn't get it. I just kind of sat, I want to build bamboo houses, and before I reached out to them, I had spent 6 months planning on like sending a spy over to like get some engineer and bring him back to Brazil, good artists copy, great artists steal, and then in my process of Vigzuel, I learned that it's just, there's no need to do that. This is 2015 now, and this is we have a collective mind called the internet. We can all throw ideas in there and see what happens. So I sent him an email and I just said, listen, bamboo, Hawaii, awesome. Big American, because I can get their thing. I said, I don't get it. Nope. But come to Brazil. And first conversation we had is they said to me, Mark, do you know of a place called Acre? I said, Acre. You mean Acre? And it's funny because as a missionary, ever since I was a missionary in Brazil, when anybody asks me about my accent, I always respond and say that I'm from Acre, because it's a joke in Brazil that Acre doesn't exist, because nobody's ever met anybody from Acre. And so, therefore, no one has the accent, no one knows. And so I always said I was from there. I'm like, well, I have no clue about Acre, but I'll find out about it. So at this point, I did a quick Wikipedia, and I find out that the reason they asked me is because Acre has the largest bamboo deposits in the world. But this is as of 2008 information. So we were looking at satellite things, and according to calculations, there was more than, you know, 2 million acres of bamboo in the Amazon basin, but we had to go find it, you know? And as you saw, the size of the Amazon is not small. So before we get going into this, I want to show you bamboo growing. Bamboo can grow 30 centimeters a day. It shoots up to its max height within a month. This is a stop-motion animation of 15 days, I believe, or something like that. And I was really sad and put some music to it, because it seems like it should have like that Star Wars. Because it's so amazing, you know. If you look at it, it looks like an alien supernatural force that anything on planet Earth should be able to grow that fast. But it does, and it does so at such an enormous rate. It's within 3 years after this pole is out of the ground, we can turn that into a house. 3 years. As it said in the video there, that you with wood building, with wood, you have 12 times the area you're going to make that house. With bamboo, it's the exact equivalent. So if I'm making a 100,000 square foot home, I can do 100,000 square foot plantation to supply that bamboo. And its productivity per acre is unheard of within like the tree world. In Brazil, ever since I've gotten there, I've always said, oh, I love these eucalyptus trees. These are so beautiful. And I come to find out those things are like a cancer, an environmental cancer. And in Hawaii, when I went in my Hawaii trip, that when I showed you there, I get there and they and I'm like, oh, you guys have got these awesome eucalyptus too. And they go, yeah, it's against the law now to plant them because the Japanese came in here and planted all up just like they did in Brazil. And once a country or once an economy gets evolved, you've got no use for eucalyptus. Eucalyptus is it's junk wood that you use basically for burning and you use for, you know, building, you know, other things like that. And so, and what it does is it's not a native species. It comes from Australia. You know, it's what koalas eat, and that's what there it should have stayed. But it's the second fastest growing organism on planet Earth. And I've got a little theory that, again, you know, with us, the Europeans that came over and conquered the Americas, they didn't give any value to anything these native people were doing. You know, they didn't give any values to anything. They treated them as if they were just savage, you know, crazy people. But truth is, you know, these guys, in my opinion, they have some of the most advanced, you know, technologies that, you know, we have ever heard of. You know, we know of the Mayans and the Aztecs. Well, the Mayans and the Aztecs are the Indians that were not so bright. Don't take it wrong, but they were the ones that they went extinct because of deforestation, because of monocropping, because of doing, you know, exactly the same type of stuff that we're doing today. You know, you can look back at these ancient civilizations, these ancient cultures, and it's the exact same type of stuff. Their population outgrew for the what they were doing, and they started doing these monocrop systems, you know, genetically modifying their corn is a genetically modified version of wheat, you know, and it just goes like that. And so these Indians, though, down further in the Amazon, because like I said, it's believed that that Amazon was created with what they call Teja Preta techniques, which are called black land techniques, and what they do is the Indians would throw all of the organic ash into a certain area for a period of time before they'd start planting, and they would move in like these nomadic tribe situations like that. Well, they left the largest bamboo deposit in the world. Like I said, Brazil, without planting a single bamboo pole, has the same amount of bamboo right now as China does with having planted and cultivated bamboo for the last 50 years. Why? Because their population is so much bigger than their landmass, and long ago they burned out their trees, and they had to learn how to use it. If you look at all these different Stonehenge, why did those people go extinct? Burned all their trees, building their buildings. So we see that these Indians, they still have these native cultures living there today in harmony with the jungle, not wanting anything to do with society except for to get a machete and some rice. Last week, there was Indians that invaded a city right next to our factory we're opening, and they just went in and got rice and machetes and went back into the jungle because they are starting to get problems with the narco traffickers and the deforesters. And they're coming out on their places, and they're giving them the same white man flus that made them turn into nomadic cultures before. So here you can see, like I said, here's some of these stats. I'm just going to keep on... going here, but afterwards I'm going to put this on a link and I'll send it to everybody if you want to check out in detail. So, like I said, so Acre, it's the most amazing place in the world, and it's because of that guy. This guy has turned into, I used to worship Steve Jobs, you know. Now, Steve Jobs, pardon my French, he's an asshole compared to this guy, okay? This guy here, in 1988, he was eventually assassinated by as they call in Brazil, the ruralistas, the rural cattle farmers, because he was the first guy that actually said, hey, stop burning down these forests. Stop cutting this crap down to put cows on it, because I have a job. I go and collect rubber from it, and I, you know, we can't do this if you're burning it down for cattle. So, like I said, so he was started making some international letters, and he was the first guy from that place that, like, learned how to write a letter practically, you know. Marina Silva, who was his partner in, they created the union for these autonomistas so they could get rights and fight as a collective, because you can imagine, you know, these naturists walking through the jungle picking up berries and nuts are not going to be able to fend well against the ruralistas and their guns and their ammo, right? So Chico was the first to kind of, like, I call him the, you know, everyone uses this image of Che Guevara, who killed and murdered and did all this horrible stuff, you know. This is the guy we should be talking about as a revolutionary that should be on everyone's T-shirts. And I'm actually going to make T-shirts and say, Chico's my hero. Put him on a site. You guys can all buy him. Anyway, so Chico, here's a great quote that I have turned into my mantra sort of thing. At first, I thought I was fighting to save the rubber trees. Then I thought I was fighting to save the Amazon rainforest. And now I realize I'm fighting for humanity. Again, the Amazon rainforest provides, I don't have any off the top statistics, but medicines, you know, every single thing. It's the most biodiverse, rich environment on planet Earth. And as you can see from the previous slides, if nothing was done, we would have been gone. And so, like I said, the average, in the Amazon rainforest, 50% is gone. But in Acre, this little state that didn't belong to Brazil until the rubber trade, and it was actually traded over to Brazil from Bolivia to build a train that Brazil never did, but then they sent their Texans, the Gaúchos, to protect it, and so it stayed into Brazil. But, so anyway, so there's a deforestation of 17%. And it's the most evolved culture I've ever seen in Brazil. Let's say within their people, you know. Everywhere else in Brazil, you have this problem. There's cheap alcohol in Brazil. It's called pinga. And so you have these guys, they call cachaceiras. They're walking around the street. In Acre, it doesn't happen. You don't see it. They all are part of these religions and stuff that take a tribal tea called ayahuasca that is today being used to treat PTSD and all kinds of different addictions and all that kind of stuff. But all these, you know, hard alcohol can't be purchased in the city unless it's like a contraband type thing. But it's not because it's illegal. It's just because there's no market for it. And so it's only someone like comes into town and like, hey, where do I get it? Buys it and then gets in kind of into one of these religions where they take this, you know, this ceremonial sacrament. A lot of them are Christian based as well. And they all of a sudden just don't want to do it. One of our guys from the EPA that works for us there, his radio got stolen out of his car. And they left a pair of sunglasses because they don't steal, they trade. But he went out to a guy on the street and said, hey, listen, I think they did this on accident. You know, I don't think they would do this to me because I'm really nice to him and cool. You think they did this on accident? And we went to lunch, came back, and the radio was on the counter of the hotel. So I'm saying it's just a very, very different place. I had a friend of mine down there with me right now. We're filming for a History Channel series that we're going to do based on the project. And he said it was a Wild West that Andy Warhol made. Because it is. It's so beautiful. It's like, it's colorful. It's amazing. This right here is, I took from the back step of Chico Mendes' house. I was there 5 days ago and saw, you know, exactly the place where he was murdered. And, you know, it's a tragic story. And I actually, just before I left the jungle, I sat down with the director and of the Chico Mendes Institute and his daughter. And it was the best part of this whole project was that, to, like, you know, sit with his daughter and to tell her that we're, you know, because right here it says, here they killed Chico Mendes, the fight continues, the luta continua. And so I told her, I said, you know, when I told her about our project, I said, listen, you know, I just want to tell you that, you know, your dad did not die in vain, and the only reason that we're going to be able to start this program that we think can save the Amazon is because of these bamboo forests that exist. So our first place we started was we went to the governor, and Here I am with the David Sands, the head architect from that last video. He's on the end there. He this was so amazing to have him there because, again, he's 20 years in this project. And they had just gotten done with, like, the bamboo tour, as I say. They had gone through to India, China, Philippines, Vietnam, and they were trying to launch this idea, this concept of this plywood. But all of these countries that already have this bamboo to do it with, they're already got it dedicated to certain economic ends that they're not going to just go ahead and take it out of it for that. And they don't have the land mass to just plant millions of acres of bamboo. It's impossible. So literally, they were just kind of like, they were just looking at Brazil because, again, Brazil today just got ranked as the second worst place to do business in the world. We're proud of that. Yeah, Argentina is last. So as long as they're there, we're there, we're okay with that. But so it's, you know, so that's why they were just kind of scared of it. And so I sent them that email and they just were, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Like, our angel. So I went up there and January, we just signed our contracts and presented our project for the state. But I started out 6 months ago going up there, and this is what we were finding. So, because again, Acre is the best. So this is where Acre is, where 17% is only deforested, right? So I'm going out there, and we were looking at satellite images that told us we had 2 million acres of bamboo there. I'm like, woo! You know what I mean? I thought we'd just get off the plane, just like, woo! Ah. Anyway, we get out there, and I start going by hot air balloon, by helicopter, by every single way you can. And every time we'd get there, it was gone. Or we had other spots where bamboo, it's an amazing beast. It when you plant it, you have to do cloning because the seeds are only launched once every 30 to 130 years, depending on the species. And when it flowers, it all goes at once. And so basically, it all dies at once. And you have, like, within bamboo, you got to treat it within, like, 30 to 60 days, otherwise the insects get it. And so basically, like, all of these forests we were getting to were the ones that had just flowered. And it was, you know, it was heartbreaking and stuff. But we luckily, the most amazing part about this whole thing is, so these guys that came over for the rubber trade that my dad wrote these books about, they stayed in the jungle, and they're still there in the jungle. And we ended up having to go back to them and saying, hey, guys, where's the bamboo, man? And these guys took us exactly to the bamboos. And so we ended up going. And but along the way, I wanted to get into this real quick. I'm sure you've all heard of the Lost City of El Dorado. It was a legend that the first explorers into the Amazon basin, they discovered a city that was, rich in, it was full of people. They had infrastructure. They had streets, roads, everything. And claimed that it was, the most intricate society, he could ever imagine could live there, And that later on when they were reading about this, and the Amazon had turned into such a harsh environment, shall we say, that, it was like they couldn't imagine, having big civilizations there. It seemed so crazy to them. And so, because then again, they haven't found any ruins. My wife, who, she's an archaeology and crazy advocate, and she had, where are the ruins of Brazil? I don't know. They didn't need to make them. And so anyway, I've been going along the way, and I'm throwing this back on many references and whatnot. And so far, I've gotten no pushback. I believe that this city was built of bamboo, and that literally it was El Dorado, it's golden, not Del Oro, which would be of gold. And again, it was the Indians telling them of, listen, there's those Indians down there that are in the city of gold, go talk to them, And I think they were trying to get them out into the jungle. And what happened, though, is that once these white man diseases came into the jungle, they turned into this nomadic culture to get away from the diseases. And then what happened were these amazing bamboo infrastructures, I believe, were then biodegradable. And the jungle took it back up. And what it left is, like I said, they believe that the Amazon isn't a chance the way it was. It was orchestrated, it was forced, engineered by people to do certain things. An intern of ours from the Institute, she just went up to Machu Picchu and sent me pictures of bamboo infrastructures below Machu Picchu that they say are older than the infrastructures of Machu Picchu. And so I believe that this city was built of bamboo, and therefore that's why it disappeared, and that's why it was never found, and it's because it was 100% made of bamboo. So once we, so this guy here is Danielle. He's the one that made this. He's a grad student there at the Federal University of Acre. And again, it's like it's the most advanced state I've ever seen. You know, you can in Brazil, I mean, it's like there's no industry there, only wood and cattle. Like the two devastating things. But again, it's the only people you have with a conscience. But then it's this weird split thing between these people with this environmental conscience and then people that work in the cattle industry. You got the cowboys and the Indians. You know, that's what it almost feels like, the kind of the feeling. And so this kid right here is Danielle, and he's showing us these bamboos here.
Mas quantos hectares tem de bambu? Essa que seria a informação que a gente está buscando, que é a mais precisa.
E você acha que daqui por 2 meses...
That's Carrie from Hawaii that flew out to go verify my bamboo deposits there. Because what I've done is I've already started, so like I said, we started the nonprofit called Bambuzar. And the focus of Bambuzar is for us to help let's say, setting up the infrastructure for this in the bamboom, I'm calling it, the bamboom of Brazil. And that is that we have all the largest area of agriculture to plant, right? You can integrate bamboo into all your cattle farms. What bamboo is what? It's grass. What do cows eat? Grass. We can make feed for cows out of grass. So you can have an area that's, you know, not much bigger than, you know, that they have in Europe, and just grow bamboo and feed them that. You know, you don't need them to graze like you used to do. So the idea is to educate and use this and spread it all throughout Brazil. We're already working with the south of Brazil. There's an old mining town there. There was old coal mining. And I'm going to tell me when I'm getting like, to the point where I need like time loss and stuff. Okay, I will, just because I can go on forever about this stuff. And so anyway, so the idea with the institute is to then help also then help companies do their bamboo inclusion into their products and then help them do their carbon offset with creating their own bamboo plantations. So we've got our first company is a company called Mormai. It's a surf company in Brazil, and we're doing a bamboo bike, an electric bamboo bike out of bamboo plywood. And we're going to be selling it all throughout their stores and giving a proceeds to buying degraded lands and replanting and reforesting. But again, the idea will always be to just spread this whole bamboo ecosystem throughout Brazil. We've got the largest area to be able to do it. This right here is the kind of people that we're working with, again, on the collection of the bamboo. Because we did find the bamboos, and so we now need to go in and we got to do a sustainable harvest, which means we're going to go in and identify which ones are 3 years older and more, and we're going to cut those out. But then, because it's a grass, they're going to grow up in more, you know. So it's the whole sequestration of the carbon that needs to be done within the jungle to be to have the ideal circumstances. And so what we're doing is we're working with these guys that I've called them the bamboo barons, because the rubber barons, they were called the bohasha barons. Dale Carnegie was quoted as saying that he had made a mistake and should have been a rubber baron in the Amazon. Those guys are making the good money, because for a period of about 50 years in the Amazon, in the foreword of my parents' book, Wade Davis explains that it was such a decadent new rich culture that they were importing French champagne to feed to their horses in silver buckets. And it had the highest per capita of diamonds in the entire world in the Amazon Basin. I mean, it was the roaring 20s in Brazil during that time. You know, it was the business. And so I joked that we're going to make a new era of the bamboo barons. But they're going to be these, you know, these guys that we're going to be now on a different cycle. We're going to be 2015. So we're going to be Silicon Valley type bamboo barons. That's the idea. So here's the report that just came out about our factory going up there. Super excited about that. This is the co-ops that we're actually going to work with to get it. So like I said, the extraction of the bamboo and the plantation of the bamboo, that's the beauty of it. Bamboo makes you be social, makes you be ecological, makes you be, you know, makes you have a conscience. And so we literally, we have to train people how to help us make the mudas, as they call it, the clones, to be able to do, to reach our goals. We're trying to hit 1 million acres planted in the next 10 years. We think it's 100% possible, and that's what we're going after. This is going to be our factory where we're going to start it up, and where I believe I'm going to we're going to start the Green Valley. And the idea is, you know, we have the Silicon Valley, which is focused on technologies based on silicon and all that. We need a focused area for green technologies. for technologies based on using environment ecosystems to solve our problems. You know, I'm reading a book right now called Abundance. The future is better than you think, and the idea is that technology being smart, we can solve all these problems. We can feed all the last billion people. We can continue to grow as a culture. And I believe that bamboo is that big step for us. And it's funny because, again, it's taken from the ancients. You know, that's what the ancient cultures were using, and we didn't learn from them from then. And so we're kind of going back and learning from the ancients to go forward. This is the factory we're using. Every time I read this, I probably might cry. But just to read it for you, it says, so this is the complex, the factory of Shapuri. On 22nd of December 2006, 18 years after the death of the leader, Serengeto Chico Mendes, the governor of Acre inaugurates this complex of industrial forest of Shapuri that values the forest and promotes social inclusion and sustainable development. Anyway, it closed 2 years after, and it's been closed ever since. And we're opening it. And so, like I said, when I talked to Chico's daughter, I told her, I said, we're going to make your dad's dream happen, and we're going to do it. And I'm so glad that your dad did what he did. And so here's our team here. I went around and got the top experts in Brazil, this guy with the microphone underneath him. He did a TED Talk in Brazil, but it's so funny because Brazil, it's like Portuguese. It's almost, it's so weird, but it's like almost as remote as the Asian languages for some reason, because people just, it's not Spanish, and so I don't know, but... And so, like, literally, this guy, Roberto Magno, he's got studies and demonstrations of bamboo using in plantations of cleaning black and brown water and turning it into crystal clear drinking water. And bamboo just uses all the intoxicants as a fertilizer. And he basically says that if we can adopt bamboo instead of petroleum as using it for our energy, for everything we do for petroleum, everything we do for wood, everything we do for all, you know, he hits it up. He goes, we can advance 20 years as a culture in our life expectancy. That we as a culture, we, you know, every decade we go another 10 years forward into this. And that bamboo, bamboo charcoal has no carcinogens in it. Zero, it won't release toxic smoke. If we can get this all throughout Africa, they say one of the biggest problems is respiratory illness in the developing world, and them having having the toxins of wood burning situation in their homes. Well, bamboo has no resins and no toxins, and the charcoal in Tokyo, they make Burger King makes a hamburger, and they put it in the bun, and it looks jet black bun, and it's because it's got ash in it. But it's because it has zero carcinogens, and they say that, and that's why the Asians smoke like trees, and they don't get cancers because they take capsules of charcoal, bamboo charcoal, and they say it goes in, and all of the other stuff it cleanses, it, you know, magnetizes to it, and goes out. So we've got these, you know, this amazing team of experts down there. That's the beauty of it. Is again, so I said before, you know, I had that idea that. You know, good artists copy, great artists steal. Well, I think in 2015, the ninjas, we collaborate. And we get every single ninja of their single area, and that's what we're going for here. And so, like I said, Roberto Magno, he's a PhD in the area, and he's got two different species of bamboo in Brazil named after him. And this team right here, in the middle there, you've got four guys who are part of an organization called MST, which is called the Movimento Sem Terra, which is a very controversial subject, really. Because, like, let's say, like anything in this world, it can be used for good and bad, you know? And so you have people using it to use the deforestation, they're doing it. But then, like, it started out with Chico Mendes and these guys saying, you know, like, hey, listen, you're not using that land. Let us take a little piece for ourselves. And so these guys were one of the faction that was good. And so these guys defected. And so it's not MST. It's a different version of MST. But they invaded our bamboo plantation in Goiânia. That's where we are here, is our bamboo plantation in Goiânia. And we... having jobs. And we're helping them to, we're teaching them all how to plant bamboo. And in this day, we planted, you know, like I said, 20,000 clones we did. Here's the plantation we have in Guyana growing. That's from 1 year's growth on top. The bottom one is the water treatment facility. So here's our 10-year plan of action. So it's 1 million acres of biodiverse plantation. So again, we're not going to go in and do just bamboo. We want to go in and do the latex. We want to come in and do acai, which is, you know, everyone knows of Asi now. There's a new one called Kupuasu that we've actually, the Funtaki, the same government agency that helped us do this, they've developed a sunblock, completely organic, completely natural, and made of this Kupuasu berry. The Indians have been rubbing on them for years. So the idea is that we're going to then help all these co-ops to then take all of their products out of the jungle, because today there's one Canadian company, one Australian company, and they're doing these acai things, but we're talking, you know, very small operations just because of just logistics and whatnot. But so the idea is to, you know, literally develop this entire region as, you know, a focus of all these different products that are going to develop. I personally have a belief that 3D printing, as everyone knows, is such a big deal here. Bamboo fibers with latex, I think, is going to be like the miracle mixture. And if someone wants to develop that for me, then let me know how it goes. Let me know, and I'll bring you to the Amazon. I'll give you the raw material. But I think that, you know, there's all kinds of applications. I have a plate that the Indians made that they, here we are doing this process, super low tech, and we're doing these videos and stuff that we can then viralize and get it all throughout Brazil. Because what we're doing is, again, we want to help people, the local small producers, for them to be able to plant bamboo and know that they can have an outlet game. And we can help them even get loans for land at 2% for if it's for reforestation. Okay, so we've already talked about like the structural things, but here's just a couple of the, in my idea, you know, some of the things that I was so amazed by. You know, the bamboo petroleum. That, to me, is so amazing. If you think about it, you know, everything's sucking in that carbon dioxide. And so through process of what they call a pyrolysis, what they do is it's like a molecular filter. And so you're able to just basically suck back out that carbon, and it's in a it's a biopetroleum. So you can do, you can make kerosene for airplanes. You can do all that stuff. I mean, the problem is that why they aren't doing this yet is because they just don't have it sufficiently. Because why? The only people that have the land mass sufficiently to plant it are like India and Brazil. India is, every single day there's a new news coming out. India's bamboo is flourishing. And so basically, but Brazil's, well, just, they've had so much to do with sugarcane. They've had all these different things. It's that resource curse. You know, when you've got so much of abundance of resources, you don't get creative with your resources for a while. Here's some of the other uses. Pharmaceutical, cosmetic, and chemical different uses. They've found all these different factors with the bamboo shoots of their nutritional value and stuff. Here's just some of the different news on the subject. We've got a project right now. São Paulo is currently, because of the deforestation, is passing their greatest drought in 200 years. And so we're sitting there in the middle of the Atlantic rainforest, which today only exists 7% of. That's most people don't know. There's the Amazon rainforest and there's the Atlantic rainforest. The Atlantic rainforest was the same size, but it's been 97% deforested, 93%. So only 7% exists. But so we're sitting in São Paulo, 23 million people, where it used to be a jungle, and we're like, oh, it stopped raining, I wonder why. And so we're working on this project to plant bamboo and everywhere where you can. There's this river that it's called the Rio Tietê, and it stinks like to high heaven. My uncle can attest to that. He's lived right next to it for years. I remember going to visit him when I was a child, and he was a mission president in São Paulo, and his car had recently had the smell of sewage in his car because it had backed up into his exhaust. So anyway, so that was, like I said, the bamboo water filtration and the water thing is what we're actually going to come in really hard with the bamboo czar as well. And then also planting along sides of roadways as well. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and jump to questions. And also, though, I wanted to... Yep.
She'll
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Great, great presentation. I was wondering if you could describe the economics of ranching versus the economics of bamboo on a per acre basis, and what are the economics
right.
of bamboo, and then also the biodiversity issue about the 300 different species. What mm-hmm. is there discussion about whether when you start mass producing bamboo, is it more productive to keep that biodiversity?
Yeah, it is. Just because everything in nature works better with biodiversity, you know what I mean? Like, and bamboo is so great because it's constantly, it's nutrients, it's taking out of the ground, but then it transfers it to the leaves and drops it again. And so it cycles its leaves three times a year, 3 to 5 times a year. And so if you look at any of these pictures of these bamboo fields, you'll see they're just, the ground is covered in it, you know? And they've done all kinds of feed statements, and when using that for chicken feed and for also for cows. There you are, my Laura, my intern. Sorry, it's it's funny. So they can use it for, that's the thing, is that you know how much that land costs today if you want to go buy an acre in Acre? 250 heais. So like $100 an acre. So that's what you, I mean, if that's the price and that's what they're being used for cattle, like, I didn't waste my time to go figure it out and do that right there on that. You know what I'm saying? Like, eventually we're going to get to that in the institute, and that's when we're going to take to them and say, listen, let's plant bamboo all over your cattle thing, and you can use it as your feedstock, you can use it to do this, and we're going to give you an incremental, you're going to make an extra 250K a year here for your huge, massive farm. You want to do that? Yeah. You know what I mean? So that's what I'm actually one of my greatest attributes in this area is going to be, you know, having worked in an airline industry where you every single ancillary revenue is the difference in you making money or losing money, you know? And so I'm only assuming these farmers are going to love to have, you know, because bamboo, the way it works is you never do a clear cut. And so after 3 years of a cycle, actually, so you're doing a plantation, it takes about 5 years to kind of get them to the thickness that you want to work with for doing building and stuff. But for those 2 years, you can do the bamboo shoots and all that commercialization of that stuff. So basically, it starts the financial model from the beginning. You can start generating some revenue from the beginning because you can also be selling your clones to other people out. So that's our whole purpose, too, is to help people and do kind of this, internet of cloning. So you need clones to plant here. Okay, yeah, this guy's got them here at your house. You know what I mean? You can sell them for them for $10 a clone and all that kind of stuff. You see what I'm saying? And so that's the thing, is that we, with 400 native to the area, we're always going to try and work with a native one. And then we have certain areas of Brazil that don't have, let's say, a native presence of bamboo, in which case we can try some of the Asian ones and see what works and try the other ones too, you know. But bamboo is just so harmonious with other plants too. Like I said, it feeds off the other things as well. Does that answer your question?
Since it's so incredibly fast-growing, and, of course, it's a miracle of highly efficient photosynthesis and so forth, it leads to the question about the mineral and trace metal content of the soil. So how long does it take to really deplete? Do you have to move crops from one area to another?
You don't.
Kind of like the fast-growing rice problem.
Yeah. Yeah. See, it's just, like I was saying right there, that's the big thing. That's the biggest problem with eucalyptus. Eucalyptus strips it all of it. After one or two cycles, you got to do a super expensive, ridiculous process in order for you to be able to have anything on there. Otherwise, it turns into desert again, right? So bamboo, as you can see, as you're walking through there, you don't even see the dirt because it's so covered with mulch. And it's just that all of those leaves and stuff. And that's the thing, is that with these the plantations we did with processing dirty water, it was so amazing that it would take the nutrients and leave the nutrients, but it would take all the toxicity and convert it into fibers. And so literally it was just that belief of that Mother Nature provides all of the capabilities we need to cleaning our its own things, you know what I'm saying? So it's just all within that bamboo, you know, that's what we're seeing.
Mark, obrigado por tratar os brasileiros com carinho e respeito. Muito obrigado. My question is, do you have any educational project to the people that work with the bamboo so that they don't leave the space?
Yeah, actually, that's what we're doing. We're setting up a bamboo university with Funtaki, the Foundation for Technology of Acre. And the whole idea is this. I want to create Acre as the Switzerland of Latin America. You know, I believe that it can be because you have to have that place. You know, it's centrally located there. An interesting fact is before it became officially Brazilian territory, it was technically Bolivian, but it was considered no man's land. It was considered a sacred land that was for the use of all of the different Indian tribes from the Amazon, from all these different areas, because they had such rich biodiversity. So I think that we can create there, and I want to invite everybody, old, young, and young, I don't care how old you are, if you want to go out there and check it out and learn how to do this stuff. You know, I feel like it's like we as, growing up in the Mormon culture, we always had this mission is like kind of our tithing of our life to that point, I felt, you know, that 2 years. And I feel like that our society is getting to the point where we should, you know, kind of give that kind of a thing from an environmental standpoint as well, you know. We have been, you know, so decadent for so long now, and we have gotten to the point, like I said, of this devastation so much, where I think, and everybody kind of has that dream, you know? Tell me, not one person here hasn't always kind of thought, man, I'd love to go to the Amazon, spend like a couple months there just to kind of get back into the earth, you know? Like, everybody wants to do that. So that's kind of what I want to create there. And as soon as we can build this El Dorado, the new El Dorado, what I'm calling it, new El Dorado, it's going to be 100% out of bamboo, and create this kind of a culture, like, I want, you know, universities to come. I went out and got a Dutch guy named Daniel Lipschitz. It's a great name. I laughed myself sick the first time I heard someone say it loud. And anyway, he's dedicated on this part of our business is the academic integration of all of the European institutions, because Americans, MIT, I showed an article there, MIT says it's the building material of the future. All the different academic institutions world over are already on bamboo. There's not as many entrepreneurs that know about it yet, and there's a guy named Troy Weisman, who's kind of like, let's say, if I'm going to say I'm going to be Steve Jobs, he's going to be Bill Gates, you know, he considers himself Steve Jobs, and I don't know. But so we're going to have our battle, the bamboo battle, who knows. But so there are people getting it, so that's what I just want to do, is just kind of bring up awareness, you know, there's space for everyone to work in it. And so I want to create, like I said, the Green Valley, where entrepreneurs can come there. And we're going to have, you know, the top educations at these at the factory. I'm going to have everybody have iPads. I'm going to have, you know, the coolest educational things ever. The Wired magazine, I read an article about this new technology, the hole-in-the-wall teaching method. We're going to be doing all that kind of stuff. No, we're going to have a generation of geniuses in no time. So they will be trained. And if you want to come and train with them and teach them, you can too.
One kind of bamboo is growing right here in Salt Lake City, and so far we just treat it as an invasive weed, which we really have to be careful because it can spread like crazy. And can you send one of your experts over and tell us if we can use that to get the toxins out of the soil, because we have lots of arsenic and other heavy metals in the soil here?
You know, my family has a chunk of land in southern Utah and has forever. And ever since I started this bamboo thing, I've been thinking, like, bamboo has got to go to come to Utah. And through doing some research, I found out that on the Ute Indian tribes, they've had bamboo and used bamboo for a while. And I was just as shocked by it, too. But bamboo's a grass, and so where grass can grow, bamboo should be able to grow, too. And so that's what we're dealing with. And so I would love to, and actually I can come in, I would love to come and get some pictures of it. And if I could take some back to Brazil, I'll take it to the University of Campinas. That's where we're working with in this, and we could actually identify that. And I wouldn't be surprised. Like I said, bamboo fall into these same things, you know. I didn't say specify the bamboo. The Brazilian bamboo is more timber-based, you know, so it's not as thin as the Chinese stuff, so it's even better for this stuff. It all depends on the thickness. I mean, I think you could. I would love to work on that. That'd be an awesome exchange program we could do, because I think it could be huge, huge, huge. Okay.
Mark, thank you very much. I hope that spurred lots of thoughts and ideas for people. Please, if everyone can join me in thanking Mark for coming today.
That's an example of coming back to school from your mission.
Oh, yeah.